Records, old and new, vinyl and digital, on state-of-the-art equipment.
Tight degree of precision, and that's when you press play and you sit back and you think, my goodness me.
Record Review celebrates 60 years with a special edition for Record Store Day, next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, next tonight on Radio 3, it's just gone 9 o'clock, and our drama on 3 is a new production of Shakespeare's Richard II, and the first recording of any Shakespeare play to be made and broadcast in binaural sound. You'll hear this aspect of it best if you listen on headphones, either now or after the broadcast online. The play's introduced by its director, Alison Hindle.
Richard II by William Shakespeare was written and first performed in 1595. It's one of the only four plays by Shakespeare written entirely in verse, and it is, in my view, the most lyrical of the history plays. The action of the play follows the last years of Richard's reign from 1397 to 1399 and concerns the deposition of the king and the usurpation of the throne by Henry Bolingbroke, who becomes Henry IV. The play opens with Bolingbroke's accusations against Mowbray, the Duke of Norfolk, that he was responsible for the death of the Duke of Gloucester, the king's uncle. Richard's reactions to these accusations cause the chain of events that lead to his ultimate downfall. It's the tragic story of a man so caught up in self-absorption that he fails to notice when the circumstances change around him, or to act accordingly. It has a compelling and fascinating central character whose discovery of human empathy and realisation of a world beyond himself come too late to save him from tragedy. And there's one telling moment on the ramparts at Flint Castle when Richard is negotiating with Bolingbroke and Northumberland, and he notices that his ruminations on death have caused his cousin, the Duke of Aumerle, to weep. And for me, it is the turning point for the character. Richard II by William Shakespeare, with Joel McCormack as Richard.
Old John of Gaunt, time-honoured Lancaster, hast thou, according to thy oath and bond, brought hither Henry Hereford, thy bold son, here to make good the boisterous late appeal which then our leisure would not let us hear against the Duke of Norfolk, Thomas Mowbray?
I have, my liege.
Then call them to our presence. Face to face and frowning brow to brow, ourselves will hear the accuser and the accused freely speak. High-stomached are they both and full of ire, in rage deaf as the sea, hasty as fire.
Many years of happy days befall my gracious sovereign, my most loving liege.
Each day still better others' happiness until the heavens envying earth's good hap add an immortal title to your crown.
We thank you both, yet one but flatters us, as well appeareth by the cause you come, namely to appeal each other of high treason. Cousin of Hereford, what dost thou object against the Duke of Norfolk, Thomas Mowbray?
First, heaven be the record to my speech. In the devotion of a subject's love, and free from other misbegotten hate, come I appellant to this princely presence. Now, Thomas Mowbray, do I turn to thee. Thou art a traitor and a miscreant, too good to be so, and too bad to live. Once more, the more to aggravate the note, with a foul traitor's name, stuff I thy throat, and wish, so please my sovereign, ere I move, what my tongue speaks, my right-drawn sword may prove.
Let not my cold words here accuse my zeal. The blood is hot, but must be cooled for this. Yet can I not of such tame patience boast as to be hushed, and naught at all to say. First, the fair reverence of your highness curbs me from giving reins and spurs to my free speech, which else would post until it has returned these terms of treason doubled down his throat. Setting aside his high blood's royalty, I do defy him and I spit at him, call him a slanderous coward and a villain. Meantime, let this defend my loyalty. By all my hopes, most falsely doth he lie.
Pale, trembling coward, there I throw my gage. If guilty dread have left thee so much strength as to take up mine honour's pawn, then stoop.
I take it up. And by that sword, I swear, which gently laid my knighthood on my shoulder, I'll answer thee in any knightly trial. And when I mount, alive may I not light, if I be traitor or unjustly fight.
What doth our cousin lay to Mowbray's charge? It must be great that can inherit us so much as of a thought of ill in him.
Look, what I speak, my life shall prove it true. That Mowbray hath received 8,000 nobles in name of lending for your highness' soldiers, the which he hath detained for lewd employments like a false traitor and injurious villain. Beside, I say, and will in battle prove, that all the treasons for these 18 years complotted and contrived in this land fetch from false Mowbray their first head and spring. Further, I say, and further will maintain, that he did plot the Duke of Gloucester's death.
How high a pitch his resolution soars. Mowbray of Norfolk, what sayst thou to this?
Oh, let my sovereign turn away his face and bid his ears a little while be deaf, till I have told this slander of his blood how God and good men hate so foul a liar.
Mowbray, impartial are our eyes and ears. Were he my brother, nay, my kingdom's heir, as he is but my father's brother's son, now by my scepter's oar I make a vow. Such neighbour nearness to our sacred blood should nothing privilege him, nor partialize the unstooping firmness of my upright soul. He is our subject, Mowbray. So art thou. Free speech and fearless I to thee allow.
Then, Bolingbroke, as low as to thy heart, through the false passage of thy throat, thou liest. For Gloucester's death I slew him not, but to my own disgrace neglected my sworn duty in that case. This is my fault. As for the rest appealed, it issues from the rancour of a traitor, which in myself I boldly will defend and interchangeably hurl down my gage upon this overweening traitor's foot, to prove myself a loyal gentleman in haste, whereof most heartily I pray your highness to assign our trial day.
Wrath-kindled gentleman, be ruled by me. Forget, forgive, conclude, and be agreed. Our doctors say this is no month to bleed. Good uncle, let this end where it began. We'll calm the Duke of Norfolk, you, your son.
To be a make-peace shall become my age. Throw down, my son, the Duke of Norfolk's gage.
And Norfolk, throw down his.
When, Harry, when? Obedience bids I should not bid again.
Norfolk, throw down, for rage must be withstood. Give me his gage. Lions make leopards tame.
Yea, but not change his spots. Take but my shame, and I resign my gage. My dear, dear lord, the purest treasure mortal times afford is spotless reputation. That away, men are but gilded loam or painted clay. Mine honour is my life. Both grown in one. Take honour from me, and my life is done.
Cousin, throw up your gage. Do you begin?
God defend my soul from such deep sin. Shall I seem crestfallen in my father's sight? Or with pale beggar fear impeach my height before this out-dared dastard? Ere my tongue shall wound my honour with such feeble wrong, or sound so base a parle, my teeth shall tear the slavish motive of recanting fear, and spit it bleeding in his high disgrace, where shame doth harbour, even in Mowbray's face.
We were not born to sue, but to command. Which since we cannot do to make you friends, be ready, as your lives shall answer it, at Coventry upon St. Lambert's Day. There shall your swords and lances arbitrate the swelling difference of your settled hate. Since we cannot atone you, we shall see. Justice designed the victor's chivalry.
Lord O'Merle! Is Harry Hereford armed?
Yea, at all points, longs to enter in.
The Duke of Norfolk, sprightfully and bold, stays but the summons of the Appellant's trumpet.
Why then, the champions are prepared, and stay for nothing but His Majesty's approach.
Marshal, demand of yonder champion the cause of his arrival here in arms. Ask him his name, and orderly proceed to swear him in the justice of his cause.
In God's name and the King's, say who thou art, and why thou comest thus knightly clad in arms. Against what man thou comest, and what thy quarrel? Speak truly on thy knighthood and thy oath.
My name is Thomas Mowbray, Duke of Norfolk, who hither come engaged by my oath both to defend my loyalty and truth against the Duke of Hereford that appeals me, to prove him, in defending of myself, a traitor to my God, my King, and me. And as I truly fight, defend me, heaven.
Marshal, demand of yonder knight in arms both who he is and why he cometh hither thus plated in habiliments of war.
What is thy name? And wherefore comest thou hither before King Richard in his royal lists? Speak like a true knight, so defend thee, heaven.
Harry of Hereford, Lancaster, and Derby am I, who ready here do stand in arms to prove by God's grace and my body's valour in lists on Thomas Mowbray, Duke of Norfolk, that he's a traitor, foul and dangerous to God of Heaven, King Richard, and to me. And as I truly fight, defend me, heaven.
On pain of death, no person be so bold or daring hardy as to touch the lists, except the Marshal and such officers appointed to direct these fair designs.
Lord Marshal, let me kiss my sovereign's hand and bow my knee before His Majesty.
The appellant in all duty greets your highness and craves to kiss your hand and take his leave.
Cousin of Hereford, as thy cause is right, so be thy fortune in this royal fight. Farewell, my blood, which if today thou shed, lament we may, but not revenge thee dead.
Oh, let no noble eye profane a tear for me if I be gored with Mowbray's spear. As confident as is the falcon's flight against a bird, so I with Mowbray fight. My loving lord, I take my leave of you. Of you, my noble cousin, Lord O'Merle. Add proof unto mine armour with thy prayers, and with thy blessings steal my lance's point, that it may enter Mowbray's waxen coat and furbish new the name of John Urgaunt.
God in thy good cause make thee prosperous. Be swift like lightning in the execution, and let thy blows, doubly redoubled, fall like amazing thunder on the casque of thy adverse, pernicious enemy. Rouse up thy youthful blood, be valiant, and live.
Mine innocence and St. George to thrive.
However God or fortune cast my lot, there lives or dies, true to King Richard's throne, a loyal, just, and upright gentleman.
Order the trial, Marshal, and begin.
Harry of Hereford, Lancaster, and Derby, receive thy sword, and God defend the right.
Strong as a tower in hope, I cry amen.
Go bear this sword to Thomas, Duke of Norfolk. Sound drums, and set forward combatants. Hath thrown his warder down.
Let them lay by their helmets and their swords and both return back to their chairs again. Draw near. For that our kingdom's earth should not be soiled with that dear blood which it hath fostered, and for our eyes do hate the dire aspect of civil wounds ploughed up with neighbour's sword, and for we think the eagle-winged pride of sky-aspiring and ambitious thoughts with rival-hating envy set you on to wake our peace, which in our country's cradle draws the sweet infant breath of gentle sleep, therefore we banish you our territories. You, Cousin Hereford, upon pain of death, till twice 5 summers have enriched our fields, shall not regret our fair dominions, but tread the stranger paths of banishment.
Your will be done. This must my comfort be. That sun that warms you here shall shine on me,
and those his golden beams to you here lent shall point on me and gild my banishment.
Mowbray, for thee remains a heavier doom, which I with some unwillingness pronounce. The sly, slow hours shall not determinate the dateless limit of thy dear exile. The hopeless word of never to return breathe I against thee upon pain of life.
A heavy sentence, my most sovereign liege, and all unlooked for from your highness' mouth. The language I have learnt these 40 years, my native English, now I must forego, and now my tongue's use is to me no more than an unstringed viol or a harp. Within my mouth you have enjailed my tongue, doubly portcullised with my teeth and lips, and dull, unfeeling, barren ignorance is made my jailer to attend on me. What is thy sentence, then, but speechless death, which robs my tongue from breathing native breath?
It boots thee not to be compassionate. After our sentence, plaining comes too late.
Then thus I turn me from my country's light to dwell in solemn shades of endless night.
Return again, and take an oath with thee. Lay on our royal sword your banished hands. Swear by the duty that you owe to God to keep the oath that we administer. You never shall, so help you truth and God, embrace each other's love in banishment, nor never look upon each other's face, nor never write, regret, nor reconcile this lowering tempest of your home-bred hate, nor never by advised purpose meet to plot, contrive, or complot any ill against us, our state, our subjects, or our land.
I swear.
And I to keep all this.
Mowbray, so far as to mine enemy, by this time, had the king permitted us, one of our souls had wandered in the air. Confess thy treasons ere thou fly the realm. Since thou hast far to go, bear not along the clogging burden of a guilty soul.
No, Bolingbroke, if ever I were traitor, my name be blotted from the book of life, and I from heaven banished as from hence. But what thou art, God, thou and I do know, and all too soon I fear the king shall rue.
Uncle, even in the glasses of thine eyes I see thy grieved heart. Thy sad aspect hath, from the number of his banished years, plucked 4 away. 6 frozen winters spent, return with welcome home from banishment.
How long a time lies in one little word. 4 lagging winters and 4 wanton springs end in a word. Such is the breath of kings.
I thank my liege that in regard of me he shortens 4 years of my son's exile, but little vantage shall I reap thereby. For ere the 6 years that he hath to spend can change their moons and bring their times about, my oil-dried lamp and time-bewasted light shall be extinct with age and endless night. My inch of taper will be burnt and done, and blindfold death not let me see my son.
Why, uncle, thou hast many years to live.
But not a minute, king, that thou canst give. Shorten my days thou canst with sullen sorrow, and pluck nights from me, but not lend a morrow.
Thy son is banished upon good advice, whereto thy tongue a party verdict gave. Why at our justice seems thou then to lower?
Things sweet to taste prove in digestion sour. You urge me as a judge, but I had rather you would have bid me argue like a father.
Cousin, farewell. Uncle, bid him so. 6 years we banish him, and he shall go.
Cousin, farewell. What presence must not know, from where you do remain, let paper show.
My lord, no leave take I, for I will ride, as far as land will let me by your side.
Oh, to what purpose dost thou hoard thy words, that thou return'st no greeting to thy friends?
I have too few to take my leave of you.
What is 6 winters? They are quickly gone.
To men enjoy, but grief makes 1 hour 10.
Call it a travel that thou takest for pleasure.
My heart will sigh when I miscall it so, which finds it an enforced pilgrimage.
The sullen passage of thy weary steps esteemeth foil, wherein thou art to set the precious jewel of thy home return.
Nay, rather, every tedious stride I make will but remember me what a deal of world I wander from the jewels that I love.
Teach thy necessity to reason thus. There is no virtue like necessity. Think not the king did banish thee, but thou the king. Or, suppose, devouring pestilence hangs in our air, and thou art flying to a fresher clime. Suppose the singing birds, musicians, the flowers, fair ladies, and thy steps no more than a delightful measure of a dance. For gnarling sorrow hath less power to bite the man that mocks at it and sets it light.
Oh, who can hold a fire in his hand by thinking on the frosty Caucasus? Or cloy the hungry edge of appetite by bare imagination of a feast? Or wallow naked in December snow by thinking on fantastic summer's heat? Oh no, the apprehension of the good gives but the greater feeling to the worse.
Come, come, my son. I'll bring thee on thy way. Had I thy youth and cause, I would not stay.
Then England's ground, farewell, sweet soil, adieu. My mother and my nurse that bears me yet. Where'er I wander, boast of this I can. Though banished, yet a true-born Englishman.
Cousin Amel, how far brought you High Hereford on his way?
I brought High Hereford, if you call him so, but to the next highway, and there I left him.
Say, what a store of parting tears were shed.
Faith, none of me, except the north-east wind, which then blew bitterly against our faces, awaked the sleeping room, and so by chance did grace our hollow parting with a tear.
What said our cousin when you parted with him?
Farewell. Marry, would the word farewell have lengthened hours and added years to his short banishment, he should have had a volume of farewells. But since it would not, he had none of me.
He is our cousin, cousin. But 'tis doubt, when time shall call him home from banishment, whether our kinsmen come to see his friends. Ourself and Bushy, Baggot here and Green, observed his courtship to the common people. How he did seem to dive into their hearts with humble and familiar courtesy. What reverence he did throw away on slaves.
Off goes his bonnet to an oyster wench, a brace of draymen bid Godspeed him well.
And had the tribute of his supple knee with thanks, my countrymen, my loving friends, as were our England in reversion his.
Well, he is gone, and with him go these thoughts. Now for the rebels, which stand out in Ireland. Expedient manage must be made, my liege, ere further leisure yield them further means for their advantage and your highness loss.
We will ourselves in person to these wars, and for our coffers, with too great a court and liberal largesse are grown somewhat light, we are enforced to farm our royal realm. The revenue whereof shall furnish us for our affairs in hand. If that comes short, our substitutes at home shall have blank charters, whereto, when they shall know what men are rich, they shall subscribe them for large sums of gold, for we will make for Ireland presently. Bushy, what news?
Oh, John of Gaunt is grievous sick, my lord, suddenly taken, and hath sent post-haste to entreat your majesty to visit him.
Where lies he?
At Ely House.
Now put it God in the physician's mind to help him to his grave immediately. The lining of his coffers shall make coats to deck our soldiers for these Irish wars. Come, gentlemen, let's all go visit him. Pray God we may make haste and come too late.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Will the king come, that I may breathe my last in wholesome counsel to his unstayed youth?
Vex not yourself, nor strive not with your breath, for all in vain comes counsel to his ear.
Oh, but they say the tongues of dying men enforce attention like deep harmony. Where words are scarce, they are seldom spent in vain, for they breathe truth that breathe their words in pain. Though, Richard, my life's counsel would not hear, my death's sad tale may yet undeaf his ear.
No, it is stopped with other flattering sounds, lascivious meters to whose venom sound the open ear of youth doth always listen. Report of fashions in proud Italy, whose manners still our tardy, apish nation limps after in base imitation. Where doth the world thrust forth a vanity, so it be new, there's no respect how vile, that is not quickly buzzed into his ears. Direct not him whose way himself will choose. 'Tis breath thou lack'st, and that breath wilt thou lose.
Methinks I am a prophet new inspired, and thus expiring do foretell of him. His rash, fierce blaze of riot cannot last, for violent fires soon burn out themselves. Small showers last long, but sudden storms are short. This royal throne of kings, this sceptred isle, this earth of majesty, this seat of Mars, this other Eden, demi-paradise, this fortress built by nature for herself, against infection and the hand of war, this happy breed of men, this little world, this precious stone set in the silver sea, which serves it in the office of a wall, or as a moat defensive to a house against the envy of less happier lands. This blessed plot, this earth, this realm, this England, this nurse, this teeming womb of royal kings, feared by their breed and famous by their birth, this land of such dear souls, this dear, dear land, is now leased out. I die pronouncing it, like to a tenement or pelting farm. England, bound in with the triumphant sea, whose rocky shore beats back the envious siege of watery Neptune, is now bound in with shame, with inky blots and rotten parchment bonds. That England that was wont to conquer others hath made a shameful conquest of itself. Ah, would the scandal vanish with my life? How happy then were my ensuing death.
The king is come. Deal mildly with his youth, for young colts being reined do rage the more.
How fares our noble uncle Lancaster?
What comfort, man? How is't with aged Gaunt?
Oh, how that name befits my composition. Old Gaunt indeed, and Gaunt in being old. Within me grief hath kept a tedious fast, and who abstains from meat that is not Gaunt? The pleasure that some fathers feed upon is my strict fast. I mean my children's looks, and there in fasting hast thou made me Gaunt. Gaunt am I for the grave. Gaunt as a grave, whose hollow womb inherits naught but bones.
Can sick men play so nicely with their names?
No. Since thou dost seek to kill my name in me, I mock my name, great king, to flatter thee.
Should dying men flatter with those that live?
No, no, men living flatter those that die.
Thou now a dying, sayest thou flatterest me?
Oh, no, thou diest, though I the sicker be.
I am in health. I breathe and see thee ill.
Now he that made me knows I see thee ill. Thy deathbed is no lesser than thy land, wherein thou liest in reputation sick, and thou, too careless patient as thou art, commit'st thy anointed body to the cure of those physicians that first wounded thee. A thousand flatterers sit within thy crown, whose compass is no bigger than thy head, Oh, had thy grandsire with a prophet's eye seen how his son's son should destroy his sons, from forth thy reach he would have laid thy shame, deposing thee before thou wert possessed. Why, cousin, wert thou regent of the world, it were a shame to let this land by lease. Landlord of England art thou now, not king. Thy state of law is bondslave to the law, and thou...
A lunatic, lean-witted fool, presuming on an ague's privilege. Darest with thy frozen admonition make pale our cheek, chasing the royal blood with fury from his native residence. Now by my seat's right royal majesty, wert thou not brother to great Edward's son? This tongue that runs so roundly in thy head should run thy head from thy unreverent shoulders.
Oh, spare me not, my brother Edward's son. That blood already, like the pelican, hast thou tapped out and drunkenly caroused. My brother Gloucester, plain, well-meaning soul, may be a precedent and witness good that thou respect'st not spilling Edward's blood. Live in thy shame, but die not shame with thee. These words hereafter thy tormentors be. Convey me to my bed, then to my grave. Love they to live, but love and honour have.
And let them die that age and sullens have. For both hast thou, and both become the grave.
I do beseech your majesty, impute his words to wayward sickliness and age in him. He loves you on my life and holds you dear, as Harry Duke of Hereford were he here.
Right, you say true. As Hereford's love, so his. As theirs, so mine, and all be as it is.
My liege, old Gaunt commends him to your majesty.
What says he, Northumberland?
Nay, nothing. All is said. His tongue is now a stringless instrument. Words, life, and all, old Lancaster hath spent.
Oh, be York the next, then must be bankrupt so. Though death be poor, it ends a mortal woe.
The ripest fruit first falls, and so doth he. His time is spent. Our pilgrimage must be. So much for that. Now for our Irish wars. We must supplant those rough, rug-headed kerns, and for these great affairs do ask some charge. Towards our assistance, we do seize to us the plate, coin, revenues, and movables whereof our uncle Gaunt did stand possessed.
How long shall I be patient? How long shall tender duty make me suffer wrong? Not Gloucester's death, nor Hereford's banishment, nor Gaunt's rebukes, nor England's private wrongs have ever made me sour my patient cheek, or bend one wrinkle on my sovereign's face. I am the last of noble Edward's sons, of whom thy father, Prince of Wales, was first. His face thou hast, for even so looked he. But when he frowned, it was against the French, and not against his friends. His noble hand did win what he did spend, and spent not that which his triumphant father's hand had won. His hands were guilty of no kindred blood, but bloody with the enemies of his kin. Oh, Richard, York is too far gone with grief, or else he never would compare between...
My uncle, what's the matter?
Oh, pardon me, if you please. Oh, my liege, seek you to seize and gripe into your hands the royalties and rights of banished Hereford? Is not Gaunt dead? And doth not Hereford live? Was not Gaunt just, and is not Harry true? Did not the one deserve to have an heir? Is not his heir a well-deserving son? Take Hereford's rights away, and take from time his charters and his customary rights. Let not tomorrow then ensue today. Be not thyself, for how art thou a king, but by fair sequence and succession? Now, afore God, God forbid I say true, if you do wrongfully seize Hereford's rights, you pluck 1,000 dangers on your head. You lose 1,000 well-disposed hearts, and prick my tender patience to those thoughts which honour and allegiance cannot think.
Think what you will, we seize into our hands his plate, his goods, his money, and his lands.
I'll not be by the while. My liege, farewell. What will ensue hereof, there's none can tell.
but by bad courses may be understood that their events can never fall out good.
Tomorrow next, we will for Ireland, and 'tis time, I trow, and we create in absence of ourself our Uncle York, Lord Governor of England. Oh. For he is just and always loved us well. Come on, our queen. Tomorrow must we part. Be merry, for our time of stay is short.
Well, lords, the Duke of Lancaster is dead.
And living too, for now his son is Duke.
Barely in title, not in revenues.
Richly in both, if justice had her right.
My heart is great, but it must break with silence, ere be disburdened with a liberal tongue.
Nay, speak thy mind, and let him ne'er speak more that speaks thy words again to thee harm.
Tends that, that thou wouldst speak to the Duke of Hereford? If it be so, out with it boldly, man. Quick is mine ear to hear of good towards him.
Now, afore God, 'tis shame such wrongs are born in him. A royal prince, and many more of noble blood in this declining land. Well, the king is not himself, but basely led by flatterers. And what they will inform merely in hate against any of us all, that will the king severely prosecute against us, our loves, our children, and our heirs.
The commons have ye pilled with grievous taxes and quite lost their hearts. The nobles have ye fined for ancient quarrels and quite lost their hearts.
And daily new exactions are devised. But what a God's name doth become of this?
Wars hath not wasted it, for ward he hath not, but basely yielded upon compromise that which his ancestors achieved with blows. More hath he spent in peace than they in wars.
The king's grown bankrupt like a broken man.
Reproach and disillusion hangeth over him.
He hath not money for these Irish wars, but by the robbing of the banished duke.
His noble kinsman. Most degenerate king. But lords, we hear this fearful tempest sing, yet seek nor shelter to avoid the storm. We see the wind set sore upon our sails, yet we strike not, but securely perish.
We see the very rack that we must suffer, and unavoided is the danger now.
Not so. Even through the hollow eyes of death, I spy life peering. But I dare not say how near the tidings of our comfort is.
Nay, let us share thy thoughts as thou dost ours.
No, I don't.
Be confident to speak, Northumberland. We three are but thyself, and speaking so, thy words are but as thoughts. Therefore, be bold.
Then thus, I have received intelligence that Harry, Duke of Hereford, Reynold, Lord Cobham, Sir Thomas Erpingham, and Francis Quaint, with 8 tall ships, 3,000 men of war, are making hither with all due expedience, and shortly mean to touch our northern shore. Perhaps they had ere this, but that they stay the first departing of the king for Ireland. If, then, we shall shake off our slavish yoke, imp out our drooping country's broken wing, redeem from broken pawn the blemished crown, wipe off the dust that hides our sceptre's guilt, and make High Majesty look like itself, away with me in post to Ravenspur. But if you faint, as fearing to do so, stay and be secret, and I myself will go.
To horse, urge doubts to them that fear.
Hold out my horse, and I will first be there. Madam.
Madam.
Why, gentlemen?
Your Majesty is too much sad. You promised when you parted with the king to lay aside life-harming heaviness and entertain a cheerful disposition.
To please the king, I did. To please myself, I cannot do it. Yet I know no cause why I should welcome such a guest as grief, save bidding farewell to so sweet a guest as my sweet Richard.
Each substance of a grief hath 20 shadows, which shows like grief itself, but is not so. For sorrow's eye, glazed with blinding tears, divides one thing entire to many objects, like perspectives, which rightly gazed upon, show nothing but confusion.
So your sweet majesty, looking awry upon your lord's departure, finds shapes of grief more than himself to wail, which, looked on as it is naught but shadows.
It may be so, but yet my inward soul persuades me it is otherwise. Howe'er it be, I cannot but be sad. But what it is, I cannot name. 'Tis nameless woe, I wot.
God save your majesty, and well met, gentlemen. The banished Bolingbroke repeals himself, and with uplifted arms is safe arrived at Ravensburg. Oh.
Now, God in heaven forbid!
Ah, madam, 'tis too true. And that is worse. The Lord Northumberland, his son, young Henry Percy, the Lords of Ross, Beaumont, and Willoughby, with all their powerful friends, have fled to him.
Oh. Why have you not proclaimed Northumberland and all the rest revolted faction traitors?
We have. Whereupon the Earl of Worcester had broken his staff, resigned his stewardship, and all the household servants fled with him to Bolingbroke.
So, Green, thou art the midwife to my woe, and Bolingbroke my sorrow's dismal heir.
Despair not, madam.
Who shall hinder me?
Here comes the Duke of York.
Oh, with signs of war about his aged neck. Uncle, for God's sake, speak comfortable words.
Should I do so, I should belie my thoughts. Comfort's in heaven, and we are on the earth, where nothing lives but crosses, cares, and grief. Your husband, he has gone to save far off, whilst others come to make him lose at home. Here am I left to underprop his land, who, weak with age, cannot support myself. I know not what to do. What? Are there no posts dispatched for Ireland? How shall we do for money for these wars? Gentlemen, will you go muster men?
My lord...
If I know how or which way to order these affairs, thus thrust disorderly into my hands, never believe me. Both are my kinsmen. The one is my sovereign, the other again is my kinsman, whom the king hath wronged. Well, somewhat we must do. Come, madam, I'll dispose of you. All is uneven, and everything is left at 6 and 7.
The wind sits fair for news to go for Ireland, but none returns. For us to levy power proportionable to the enemy is all impossible. How think you, Green?
Besides, our nearness to the king in love is near the hate of those love not the king.
And that's the wavering commons, for their love lies in their purses, and whoso empties them by so much fills their hearts with deadly hate.
Wherein the king stands generally condemned.
If judgment lie in them, then so do we, because we ever have been near the king.
Well, I will for refuge straight to Bristol Castle.
Thither will I with you. A little office shall the hateful commons perform for us, except like curs to tear us all to pieces. Will you go along with us, good Bagot?
No. I will to Ireland, to his majesty. Farewell. If heart's presages be not vain, we three here part that ne'er shall meet again.
That's as York thrives to beat back Bolingbroke.
Oh, alas, poor Duke. The task he undertakes is numbering sands and drinking oceans dry. Where one on his side fights, thousands will fly. Farewell at once, for all, and ever.
Well, we may meet again.
I fear me, never.
How far is it, my lord, to Berkeley now?
Believe me, noble lord, I am a stranger here in Gloucestershire. These high, wild hills and rough, uneven ways draws out our miles and makes them wearisome. And yet, your fair discourse hath been as sugar, making the hard way sweet and delectable.
Of much less value is my company than your good words. Oh. But who comes here?
Ah, it is my son, young Harry Percy, sent from my brother Worcester whensoever. Harry, how fares your uncle?
I had thought, my lord, to have learned his health of you.
Why, is he not with the Queen?
No, my good lord, he hath forsook the court, broken his staff of office, and dispersed the household of the king.
Oh, what was his reason?
Because your lordship was proclaimed traitor. But he, my lord, is gone to Ravenspur to offer service to the Duke of Hereford, and sent me over
my... Have you forgot the Duke of Hereford, boy?
No, my good lord. for that is not forgot, which ne'er I did remember. To my knowledge, I never in my life did look on him.
Then learn to know him now. This is the Duke.
My gracious lord, I tender you my service, such as it is, being tender, raw and young, which elder days shall ripen and confirm to more approved service and deserve.
I thank thee, gentle Percy, and be sure I count myself in nothing else so happy as in a soul remembering my good friends.
How far is it to Barclay? And what stir keeps good old York there with his man of war?
There stands the castle by yon tuft of trees, manned with 300 men, as I have heard, and in it are the lords of York, Barclay and Seymour, none else of name and noble estimate.
Here come the lords of Ross and Willoughby, bloody with spurring, fiery red with haste.
Welcome, my lords. I wot your love pursues a banished traitor. All my treasury is yet but unfelt thanks, which more enriched shall be your love and labour's recompense.
Your presence makes us rich, most noble lord,
and far surmounts our labour to attain it.
Evermore thanks are the exchequer of the poor, which till my infant fortune comes to years stands for my bounty. But who comes here? My noble uncle.
Show me thy humble heart and not thy knee, whose duty is deceivable and false.
My gracious uncle.
Tut, tut. Grace me no grace, nor uncle me no uncle. Why have those banished and forbidden legs dared once to touch a dust of England's ground? But then more why? Why have they dared to march so many miles upon her peaceful bosom, frightening her pale-faced villagers with war and ostentation of despised arms? Comest thou because the anointed king is hence? My foolish boy, the king is left behind, and in my loyal bosom lies his power. Were I but now the lord of such hot youth, as when brave Gaunt, thy father, and myself rescued the Black Prince, that young Mars of men, from forth the ranks of many thousand French, well then, how quickly should this arm of mine, now prisoner to the palsy, chastise thee, and minister correction to thy fault?
My gracious uncle, let me know my fault. On what condition stands it, and wherein?
Even in condition of the worst degree, in gross rebellion and detested treason. Thou art a banished man, and here art come before the expiration of thy time, in braving arms against thy sovereign.
As I was banished Hereford. But as I come for Lancaster. And noble uncle, I beseech your grace, look on my wrongs with an indifferent eye. You are my father, for methinks in you I see old Gaunt alive. Oh then, my father, will you permit that I shall stand condemned, a wandering vagabond, my rights and royalties plucked from my arms perforce and given away to upstart unthrifts? Wherefore was I born? If that my cousin king be king in England, it must be granted I am Duke of Lancaster. You have a son, O Merle, my noble cousin. Had you first died, and he been thus trod down, he should have found his uncle Gaunt a father to rouse his wrongs and chase them to the bay. What would you have me do? I am a subject, and I challenge law. Attorneys are denied me, and therefore, personally, I lay my claim to inheritance of free descent.
The noble Duke had been too much abused.
It stands your grace upon to do him right.
My lords of England, let me tell you this. I have had feeling of my cousin's wrongs, and laboured all I could to do him right. But in this kind to come, in braving arms, be his own carver and cut out his way to find out right with wrong, it may not be. And you that do abet him in this kind, cherish rebellion and are rebels all.
The noble Duke hath sworn his coming is but for his own, and for the right of that, we all have strongly sworn to give him aid. Oh, and let him ne'er see joy that breaks that oath.
Well, I see the issue of these arms. I cannot mend it, I must needs confess, because my power is weak and all ill left. But if I could, by him that gave me life, I would attach you all and make you stoop unto the sovereign mercy of the king. But since I cannot, be it known unto you, I do remain as neuter. So fare you well. Unless you please to enter in the castle and there repose you for the night.
An offer, uncle, that we will accept. But we must win your grace to go with us to Bristol Castle, which, they say, is held by Bushy, Baggot and their accomplices, the caterpillars of the Commonwealth, which I have sworn to weed and pluck away.
Nor friends nor foes to me welcome you are. Things past redress are now with me past care.
My Lord of Salisbury, we have stayed 10 days and hardly kept our countrymen together. And yet we hear no tidings from the king. Therefore, we will disperse ourselves. Farewell.
Stay yet another day, thou trusty Welshman. The king reposeth all his confidence in thee.
'Tis thought the king is dead. We will not stay. The bay trees in our country are all withered, and meteors fright the fixed stars of heaven. The pale-faced moon looks bloody on the earth, and lean-looked prophets whisper fearful change. Rich men look sad, and ruffians dance and leap. The one in fear to lose what they enjoy, the other to enjoy by rage and war. These signs forerun the death or fall of kings. Farewell. Our countrymen are gone and fled, as well assured. Richard, their king, is dead.
Richard. With the eyes of heavy mind, I see thy glory like a shooting star fallen to the base earth from the firmament. Thy sun sets weeping in the lowly west, witnessing storms to come, woe and unrest. Thy friends are fled to wait upon my foes. And crossly to thy good, or fortune goes.
Come forth, follow it, nailed!
Bushy and Green, I will not vex your souls, since presently your souls must part your bodies with too much urging your pernicious lives for 'twere no charity. Yet, to wash your blood from off my hands, here, in the view of men, I will unfold some causes of your deaths. You have misled a prince, a royal king. You have, in manner, with your sinful hours, made a divorce betwixt his queen and him, broke the possession of a royal bed, and stained the beauty of a fair queen's cheeks with tears drawn from her eyes by your foul wrongs. Myself, a prince by fortune of my birth, near to the king in blood and near in love, till you did make him misinterpret me, have stooped my neck under your injuries, and sighed my English breath in foreign clouds, eating the bitter bread of banishment, whilst you have fed upon my property, disparked my parks and felled my forest woods, from my own windows torn my household coat, raced out my impress, leaving me no sign save men's opinions and my living blood to show the world I am a gentleman. This and much more than twice all this, condemns you to the death. See them delivered over to execution and the hand of death.
More welcome is the stroke of death to me than Bolingbroke to England, so farewell.
My comfort is that heaven will take our souls and plague injustice with the pains of hell.
My lord Northumberland, see them dispatched.
My lord, over here.
Uncle, you say the queen is at your house. For God's sake, fairly let her be entreated. Tell her I send to her my kind commends. Take special care my greetings be delivered.
A gentleman of mine I have dispatched with letters of your love to her at large.
Thanks, gentle uncle. Come, lords, away. To fight Glendower and his accomplices. A while to work, and after holiday.
Thank you.
vassal call they this at hand?
Yea, my lord. How brooks your grace the air after your late tossing on the breaking seas?
Needs must I like it well. I weep for joy to stand upon my kingdom once again. Dear earth, I do salute thee with my hand, though rebels wound thee with their horses' hooves. As a long-parted mother with her child plays fondly with her tears and smiles in meeting, so weeping, smiling, greet I thee, my earth, and do thee favors with my royal hand. Feed not thy sovereign's foes, my gentle earth, but let thy spiders that suck up thy venom and heavy-gated toads lie in their way, doing annoyance to the treacherous feet which with usurping steps do trample thee. Yield stinging nettles to mine enemies, and when they from thy bosom pluck a flower, guard it, I pray thee, with a lurking adder. Mock not my senseless conjuration, lord. This earth shall have a feeling, and these stones prove armed soldiers ere her native king shall falter under foul rebellion's arms.
Fear not, my lord. That power that made you king hath power to keep you king in spite of all.
His grace doth mean that we are too remiss. Whilst Bolingbroke, through our security, grows strong and great in substance and in power.
Discomfortable cousin, knowest thou not that when the searching eye of heaven is hid behind the globe that lights the lower world, then thieves and robbers range abroad unseen in murders and in outrage boldly here. But when from under this terrestrial ball he fires the proud tops of the eastern pines and darts his light through every guilty hole, then murders, treasons, and detested sins, the cloak of night being plucked from off their backs, stand bare and naked, trembling at themselves. So when this thief, this traitor, Bolingbroke, who all this while hath revelled in the night whilst we were wandering with the Antipodes, shall see us rising in our throne the east, his treasons will sit blushing in his face, not able to endure the sight of day, but self-affrighted, tremble at his sin. Not all the water in the rough, rude sea can wash the balm off from an anointed king. The breath of worldly men cannot depose the deputy elected by the Lord. For every man that Bolingbroke hath pressed to lift shrewd steel against our golden crown, God, for his Richard, hath in heavenly pay a glorious angel. Then, if angels fight, weak men must fall, for heaven still guards the right. Welcome, Salisbury. How far off lies your power?
Nor near, nor farther off, my gracious lord, than this weak arm. Discomfort guides my tongue and bids me speak nothing but despair. One day, too late, I fear me, noble lord, hath clouded all thy happy days on earth. Oh, call back yesterday, bid time return, and thou shalt have 12,000 fighting men. Today, unhappy day too late, o'erthrows thy joys, friends, fortunes in thy state. For all the Welshmen, hearing thou wert dead, are gone to Bolingbroke, dispersed and fled.
Comfort, my liege, why looks your grace so pale?
But now the blood of 20,000 men did triumph in my face, and they are fled. Until so much blood thither come again, have I not reason to look pale and dead? All souls that will be safe fly from my side, for time hath set a blot upon my pride.
Comfort, my liege, remember who you are.
I had forgot myself. Am I not king? Is not the king's name 20,000 names? Arm, my name. Puny subject strikes at thy great glory. Look not to the ground, ye favourites of a king. Are we not high? I be our thoughts. I know my uncle York hath power enough to serve our turn. Who comes here?
More health and happiness betide my liege than can my care-tuned tongue deliver him.
My ear is open and my heart prepared. The worst is worldly loss thou canst unfold. Scroope, is my kingdom lost? Why, 'twas my care. And what loss is it to be rid of care? Strives Bolingbroke to be as great as we? Greater he shall not be. Revolt our subjects? That we cannot mend. They break their faith to God as well as us. Cry woe, destruction, ruin and decay. The worst is death, and death will have his day.
Glad am I that your highness is so armed to bear the tidings of calamity. Like an unseasonable stormy day which makes the silver rivers drown their shores as if the world were all dissolved to tears. So high above his limits swells the rage of Bolingbroke, covering your fearful land with hard, bright steel and hearts harder than steel. Both young and old rebel. And all goes worse than I have power to tell.
Too well thou tell'st a tale so ill. What is become of Bushy? Where is Green? Has Bagot let the dangerous enemy measure our confines with such peaceful steps? If we prevail, the head shall pay for it. I warrant they have made a peace with Bolingbroke.
Peace have they made with him indeed, my lord.
Our villains! Vipers, damned without redemption. Dogs, easily won to fawn on any man. Snakes, in my heart blood warmed, that sting my heart. Three Judases, each one thrice worse than Judas. Would they make peace? Terrible hell, make war upon their spotted souls for this.
Again, uncurse their souls. Their peace is made with heads and not with hands. Those whom you curse have felt the worst of death's destroying wound, and lie full low, graved in the hollow ground.
Can this be true? Are Bushy and Green dead?
Both of them at Bristol lost their heads.
Where is the Duke, my father, with his power?
No matter where. Of comfort no man speak. Let's talk of graves, of worms, of epitaphs. Make a dust our paper, and with rainy eyes write sorrow on the bosom of the earth. Let's choose executors and talk of wills, and yet not so. For what can we bequeath save our deposed bodies to the ground? Our lands, our lives, and all our Bolingbrokes, and nothing can we call our own but death. For God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the death of kings. How some have been deposed, some slain in war, some haunted by the ghosts they have deposed, some poisoned by their wives, some sleeping killed, all murdered. For within the hollow crown that rounds the mortal temples of a king keeps death his court. And there the antic sits, scoffing his state and grinning at his pomp, allowing him a breath, a little scene, to monarchize, be feared, and kill with looks, infusing him with self and vain conceit, as if this flesh which walls about our life were brass impregnable. And humored thus, comes at the last, and with a little pin, bores through his castle wall, and farewell, king. Cover your heads, and mock not flesh and blood with solemn reverence. Throw away respect, tradition, form and ceremonious duty, for you have but mistook me all this while. I live with bread like you. Feel want. Taste grief. Need friends. Subjected thus. How can you say to me I am a king?
My lord, wise men ne'er sit and wail their woes, but presently prevent the ways to wail. Fear and be slain, no worse can come to fight, and fight and die is death destroying death, where fearing dying pays death servile breath.
My father hath a power. Inquire of him and learn to make a body of a limb.
Thou chidest me well. Proud Bolingbroke, I come to change blows with thee for our day of doom. This ague fit of fear is overblown. An easy task is to win our own. Say, Scroope, where lies our uncle with his power? Speak sweetly, man, although thy looks be sour.
Men judge by the complexion of the sky, the state and inclination of the day. So may you by my dull and heavy eye, my tongue hath but a heavier tale to say. Your uncle York is joined with Bolingbroke, and all your northern castles yielded up, and all your southern gentlemen in arms upon his party.
Thou hast said enough. Beshrew thee, cousin, which didst lead me forth of that sweet way I was into despair. What say you now? What comfort have we now? By heaven, our hate in everlastingly that bids me be of comfort any more. Go to Flint Castle. There I'll pine away. A king, woe slave, shall kingly woe obey.
My liege, one word.
He does me double wrong that wounds me with the flatteries of his tongue. Discharge my followers. Let them hence away. From Richard's night to Bolingbroke's fair day.
So that by this intelligence we learn, the Welshmen are dispersed and Salisbury is gone to meet the king.
The news is very fair and good, my lord. Richard, not far from hence, hath hid his head.
It would beseem the Lord Northumberland to say King Richard. Alack the heavy day when such a sacred king should hide his head.
Mistake not, uncle, further than you should.
Take not, good cousin, further than you should, lest you mistake. The heavens are all your heads.
I know it, uncle, and oppose not myself against their will. But who comes here? Welcome, Harry. What, will not this castle yield?
The castle royally is manned, my lord, against thy entrance.
Royally? Why, it contains no king.
Yes, my good lord, it doth contain a king. King Richard lies within the limits of yon Lyman Stone, and with him are the Lord O'Merle, Lord Salisbury, Sir Stephen Scroope, besides a clergyman of holy reverence, who I cannot learn.
Oh, belike it is the Bishop of Carlisle.
Northumberland, go to the rude ribs of that ancient castle. Through brazen trumpets send the breath of Parle into his ruined ears, and thus deliver. Henry Bolingbroke, on both his knees, doth kiss King Richard's hand, and sends allegiance and true faith of heart to his most royal person. Hither come, even at his feet, to lay my arms and power, provided that my banishment repealed and lands restored again be freely granted. If not, I'll use the advantage of my power and lay the summer's dust with showers of blood, rained from the wounds of slaughtered Englishmen. The which, how far off from the mind of Bolingbroke it is, such crimson tempest should bedrench the fresh green lap of fair King Richard's land, my stooping duty tenderly shall show.
I go, my lord.
Methinks King Richard and myself should meet with no less terror than the elements of fire and water, when their thundering shock at meeting tears the cloudy cheeks of heaven. Be he the fire, I'll be the yielding water. The rage be his, whilst on the earth I rain my waters. On the earth, and not on him. See, King Richard doth himself appear. as doth the blushing, discontented sun from out the fiery portal of the east when he perceives the envious clouds are bent to dim his glory and to stain the track of his bright passage to the Occident.
Yet looks he like a king. Behold, his eye, as bright as is of the eagle's, lightens forth controlling majesty. Alack, alack for woe, that any harm should stain so fair a show.
Northumberland. Hmm. We are amazed. And thus long have we stood to watch the fearful bending of thy knee, because we thought ourselves thy lawful king. And if we be, how dare thy joints forget to pay their awful duty to our presence? If we be not, show us the hand of God that hath dismissed us from our stewardship. For well we know no hand of blood and bone can grip the sacred handle of our scepter, unless he do profane, steal, or usurp. And though you think that all, as you have done, have torn their souls by turning them from us, and we are barren and bereft of friends, yet know, my master, God omnipotent, is mustering in his clouds on our behalf armies of pestilence, and they shall strike your children yet unborn and unbegot that lift your vassal hands against our head and threat the glory of our precious crown. Tell Bolingbroke, beyond me thinks he stands, that every stride he makes upon our land is dangerous treason. He is come to ope the purple testament of bleeding war. But ere the crown he looks for live in peace, 10,000 bloody crowns of mother's sons shall ill become the flower of England's face, change the complexion of her maid pale peace to scarlet indignation, and bedew her pasture's grass with faithful English blood.
The King of Heaven forbid our Lord the King should so with civil and uncivil arms be rushed upon. Thy thrice noble cousin, Harry Bolingbroke, doth humbly kiss thy hand, and by the honourable tomb he swears that stands upon your royal grandsire's bones, his coming hither hath no further scope than for his lineal royalties, and to beg enfranchisement immediate on his knees, which, on thy royal part he granted once, his glittering arms he will commend to rust, his barbed steeds to stables, and his heart to fearful service of your majesty. This swears he, as he is a prince and just, and as I am a gentleman, I credit him.
Northumberland, say thus, the king returns. His noble cousin is right welcome hither, and all the number of his fair demands shall be accomplished without contradiction. With all the gracious utterance that thou hast, speak to his gentle hearing kind commends. We do debase ourselves, cousin, do we not? To look so poorly and to speak so fair. Shall we call back Northumberland and send defiance to the traitor and so die?
No, good my lord. Let's fight with gentle words, till time lend friends and friends their helpful swords.
Oh God. Oh God. But ere this tongue of mine, that laid the sentence of dread banishment on yon proud man, should take it off again with words of sooth. Oh, that I were as great as is my grief, or lesser than my name. Oh, that I could forget what I have been, or not remember what I must be now.
Northumberland comes back from Bolingbroke.
What must the king do now? Must he submit? The king shall do it. Must he be deposed? The king shall be contented. Must he lose the name of king? A God's name. Let it go. I'll give my jewels for a set of beads. My gorgeous palace for a hermitage. My gay apparel for an armsman's gown. My figured goblets for a dish of wood. My scepter for a palmer's walking staff. my subjects for a pair of carved saints, and my large kingdom for a little grave. A little grave, an obscure grave. Or I'll be buried in the king's highway, some way of common trade, where subjects' feet may hourly trample on their sovereign's head, for on my heart they tread now whilst I live, and buried once, why not upon my head? Amel, thou weep'st, my tender-hearted cousin. We'll make foul weather with despised tears. Our sighs and they shall lodge the summer corn and make a dearth in this revolting land. Or shall we play the wanton with our woes, and make some pretty match with shedding tears, as thus to drop them still upon one place, till they have fretted us a pair of graves within the earth, and therein laid there lies two kinsmen digged their graves with weeping eyes. Would not this ill do well? Well, well, I see. I talk but idly and you laugh at me. Most mighty prince, my lord Northumberland. What says King Bolingbroke? Will his majesty give Richard leave to live till Richard die?
My lord, in the base court he doth attend to speak with you. May it please you to come down.
Oh, down, down I come. In the base court where kings grow base, to come at traitors' calls and do them grace. In the base court, come down, down court, down king, for night owls shriek where mounting larks should sing.
Stand all apart and show fair duty to his majesty. My gracious lord.
Fair cousin, you debase your princely knee to make the base earth proud with kissing it. I rather had my heart might feel your love than my unpleased eye see your courtesy. Up, cousin, up. Your heart is up, I know. Thus high at least, although your knee be low.
My gracious lord, I come but for mine own.
Your own is yours, and I am yours, and all. Cousin, I am too young to be your father, though you are old enough to be my heir. What you will have, I'll give, and willing too. For do we must, what force will have us do? Set on towards London, cousin, is it so?
Yea, my good lord.
Then I must not say no.
What sport shall we devise here in this garden to drive away the heavy thought of care?
Madam, we'll play at bowls.
'Twill make me think the world is full of rubs, and that my fortune runs against the bias.
Madam, we'll dance.
My legs can keep no measure in delight when my poor heart no measure keeps in grief. Therefore, no dancing, girl. Some other sport.
Madam, we'll tell tales.
Of sorrow or of joy?
Of either, madam.
Of neither, girl. For if of joy, being altogether wanting, it doth remember me the more of sorrow. Or if of grief, being altogether had, it adds more sorrow to my want of joy.
Madam, I'll sing.
'Tis well that thou hast cause, but thou shouldst please me better wouldst thou weep.
I could weep, madam, would it do you good?
And I could sing, would weeping do me good, and never borrow any tear of thee. But stay. Here come the gardeners. Let's step into the shadow of these trees. They'll talk of state, for everyone doth so against a change. Woe is forerun with woe.
Who bind thou up yon dangling apricocks, which like unruly children make their sire stoop with oppression of their prodigal weight? Give some supportance to the bending twigs. Go thou, and like an executioner, cut off the heads of too fast-growing sprays that look too lofty in our commonwealth. All must be even in our government. You, thus employed, I will go root away the noisome weeds, which, without profit, suck the soil's fertility from wholesome flowers.
Why should we, in the compass of a pale, keep law and form in due proportion, when our sea-walled garden, the whole land, is full of weeds, her fairest flowers choked up, her fruit trees all unpruned, her hedges ruined, her knots disordered, and her wholesome herbs swarming with caterpillars?
Hold thy peace. He that hath suffered this disordered spring hath now himself met with the fall of leaf. The weeds which his broad-spreading leaves did shelter, that seemed in eating him to hold him up, are plucked up, root and all, by Bolingbroke. I mean the royal favourites, bushy, green.
What, are they dead?
They are. And Bolingbroke hath seized the wasteful king. Oh, what pity is it that he had not so trimmed and dressed his land as we this garden? We, at time of year, do wound the bark, the skin of our fruit trees, lest being overproud in sap and blood with too much riches, it confound itself. Had he done so to great and growing men, they might have lived to bear, and he to taste, their fruits of duty. Superfluous branches we lop away, that bearing boughs may live. Had he done so, himself hath borne the crown, which waste and idle hours hath quite thrown down.
What, think you the king shall be deposed?
Tis feared he will be. Letters came last night that tell black tidings.
Thou, old Adam's likeness set to dress this garden, how dares thy harsh rude tongue sound this unpleasing news? Why dost thou say King Richard is deposed?
Pardon me, madam. Little joy I have to breathe this news, yet what I say is true. King Richard, he is in the mighty hold of Bolingbroke. Their fortunes both are weighed in your lord's scale, is nothing but himself. But in the balance of great Bolingbroke, besides himself, are all the English peers. And with that odds, he weighs King Richard down. Post you to London, and you'll find it so. I speak no more than everyone doth know.
Nimble mischance that art so light of foot, doth not thy embassage belong to me? And am I last that know it? Come, lady, go.
Madam.
To meet at London London's king in woe. What, was I born to this? That my sad look should grace the triumph of great Bolingbroke? Gardener, for telling me these news of woe, pray God the plants thou graft'st may never grow.
Poor queen. So that thy state might be no worse, I would my skill were subject to thy curse. Here did she fall a tear. Here in this place I'll set a bank of rue, sour herb of grace. Rue. Even for Ruth here shortly shall be seen, in the remembrance of a weeping queen.
Now, Bagot, freely speak thy mind, what thou dost know of noble Gloucester's death. Who wrought it with the king, and who performed the bloody office of his timeless end?
Then set before my face the Lord O'Merle.
Cousin, stand forth and look upon that man.
Aye, cousin.
My Lord O'Merle, I know your daring tongue scorns to unsay what once it hath delivered. In that dead time when Gloucester's death was plotted, I heard you say, is not my arm of length that reacheth from the restful English court as far as Calais to mine uncle's head? Amongst much other talk that very time, I heard you say that you had rather refuse the offer of 100,000 crowns than Bolingbroke's return to England, adding withal how blessed this land would be in this your cousin's death.
Princes and noble lords, shall I so much dishonour my fair stars on equal terms to give him chastisement? There is my gage, the manual seal of death, that marks thee out for hell. I say thou liest.
Maggot, forbear, thou shalt not take it up.
If that thy valour stand on sympathy, there is my gage, O Merle, engaged to thine. I heard thee say, and vauntingly thou spak'st it, that thou wert cause of noble Gloucester's death. If thou deniest it 20 times, thou liest. And I will turn thy falsehood to thy heart where it was forged with my rapier's point.
Thou darest not, coward, live to see that day.
Now by my soul, I would it were this hour.
Willoughby, thou art damned to hell for this.
O Merle, thou liest. His honour is as true in this appeal as thou art all unjust, and that thou art so. There, I throw my gage to prove it on thee. Seize it if thou darest.
And if I do not, may my hands rot off. Who sets me else? By heaven, I'll throw at all. I have 1,000 spirits in one breast to answer 20,000 such as you.
My lord Willoughby, I do remember well the very time O'Merle and you did talk.
It is very true. You were in presence then, and you can witness with me this is true.
As false, by heaven, as heaven itself is true.
Salisbury, thou liest!
Dishonourable boy! That lie shall lie so heavy on my sword that it shall render vengeance and revenge till thou, the lie-giver, and that lie do lie in earth as quiet as thy father's skull.
How fondly dost thou spur a forward horse! If I dare eat, or drink, or breathe, or live, I dare meet Salisbury in a wilderness and spit upon him whilst I say he lies, and lies, and lies! There is my bond of faith to tie thee to my strong correction. Besides, I heard the banished Mowbray say that thou, O Merle, descend two of thy men to execute the noble Duke at Calais.
Some honest Christian, trust me with a gage that Mowbray lies. Here I do throw down this, if he may be repealed, to try his honour.
These differences shall all rest under gage till Mowbray be repealed. Oh. Repealed he shall be. And though mine enemy, restored again to all his lands and signiories. When he's returned against O'Merle, we will enforce his trial.
That honourable day shall ne'er be seen. Many a time hath banished Mowbray fought for Jesu Christ in glorious Christian field, and, toiled with works of war, retired himself to Italy, and there, at Venice, gave his body to that pleasant country's earth, and his pure soul unto his captain Christ, under whose colours he has fought so long.
Why, Bishop, is Mowbray dead?
As surely as I live, my lord.
Sweet peace conduct his sweet soul to the bosom of good old Abraham. Lords appellants, your differences shall all rest under gage till we assign you to your days of trial.
Great Duke of Lancaster, I come to thee from plume-plucked Richard, who with willing soul adopts thee heir, and his high scepter yields to the possession of thy royal hand. Ascend his throne, descending now from him, and long live Henry, fourth of that name.
In God's name, I'll ascend the regal throne.
Marry, God forbid. Would God that any in this noble presence were enough noble to be upright judge of noble Richard? What subject can give sentence on his king? And who sits here that is not Richard's subject? And shall the figure of God's majesty, his captain, steward, deputy, elect, anointed, crowned, planted many years, be judged by subject and inferior breath, and he himself not present? Oh, forfend it, God, that in a Christian climate souls refined should show so heinous, black, obscene a deed. I speak to subjects, and a subject speaks, stirred up by God thus boldly for his king. My lord of Hereford here, whom you call king, is a foul traitor to proud Hereford's king. And if you crown him, let me prophesy, the blood of English shall manure the ground, and future ages groan for this foul act. No, if you raise this house against this house,
It will the woefulest division prove that ever fell upon this cursed earth.
Well have you argued, sir. And for your pains, of capital treason we arrest you here. My lord of Westminster, bait your charge to keep him safely till his dear trial.
My lord,
fetch that... hither Richard, that in common view he may surrender, so we shall proceed without suspicion.
I will be his conduct.
Lords, you that here are under our arrest, procure your sureties for your days of answer. Little are we beholding to your love, and little looked for at your helping hands.
Alack, why am I sent forward to a king before I have shook off the regal thoughts wherewith I reigned? I hardly yet have learned to insinuate, flatter, bow, and bend my knee. Give sorrow leave a while to tutor me to this submission. Yet I well remember the favours of these men. Were they not mine? Did they not sometime cry all hail to me? So Judas did to Christ, but he, in 12, found truth in all but one. I, in 12,000, none. God save the king. Will no man say amen? Am I both priest and clerk? Well then, amen. God save the king, although I be not he, and yet, amen, if heaven do think in me. To do what service am I sent for hither?
To do that office of thine own good will, which tired majesty did make thee offer, the resignation of thy state and crown to Henry Bolingbroke.
Give me the crown. Here, cousin, seize the crown. Here, cousin. On this side my hand, and on that side thine. Now is this golden crown like a deep well that owes two buckets filling one another. The emptier ever dancing in the air, the other down, unseen and full of water. That bucket down and full of tears am I, drinking my griefs whilst you mount up on high.
I thought you had been willing to resign.
My crown I am, but still my griefs are mine. Your cares set up, do not pluck my cares down. My care is loss of care by old care done. Your care is gain of care by new care won. The cares I give, I have, though given away. They tend the crown, yet still with me they stay.
Are you contented to resign the crown?
Aye. No. No. I? For I must nothing be. Therefore, no, no, for I resign to thee. Now, mark me how I will undo myself. I give this heavy weight from off my head, and this unwieldy scepter from my hand, the pride of kingly sway from out my heart. With mine own tears I wash away my balm. With mine own hands I give away my crown. With mine own tongue deny my sacred state. With mine own breath release all duteous oaths. All pomp and majesty I do forswear. My manors, rents, revenues I forego. My acts, decrees, and statutes I deny. Make me that nothing have, with nothing grieved, and thou with all pleased, that hast all achieved. Long mayst thou live in Richard's seat to sit, and soon lie Richard in an earthy pit. God save King Henry, unkinged Richard says. Send him many years of sunshine days. What more remains?
No more. But that you read these accusations and these grievous crimes committed by your person and your followers against the state and profit of this land. That, by confessing them, the souls of men may deem that you are worthily deposed.
Must I do so? And must I ravel out my weaved-up follies? Great Northumberland, if thy offences were upon record, would it not shame thee in so fair a troop to read a lecture of them? If thou wouldst, there shouldst thou find one heinous article containing the deposing of a king, marked with a blot, damned in the book of heaven. Nay, all of you that stand and look upon me, whilst that my wretchedness doth bait myself, though some of you with Pilate wash your hands, showing an outward pity, yet you Pilates have here delivered me to my sour cross, and water cannot wash away your sin.
My lord, dispatch, read all these articles.
Mine eyes are full of tears, I cannot see. And yet, salt water blinds them not so much, but they can see a sort of traitors here. Nay, if I turn my eyes upon myself, I find myself a traitor with the rest. For I have given here my soul's consent to undeck the pompous body of a king, made glory base and sovereignty a slave, proud majesty a subject, state a peasant.
My lord...
No lord of thine, thou haught, insulting man, nor no man's lord. I have no name, no title. No, not that name was given me at the font, but 'tis usurped. Alack the heavy day that I have worn so many winters out, and know not now what name to call myself. Oh, that I were a mockery king of snow, standing before the son of Bolingbroke, to melt myself away in water drops. Good king, great king, and yet not greatly good. And if my word be sterling yet in England, let it command a mirror hither straight, that it may show me what a face I have, since it is bankrupt of his majesty.
Go, one of you, and fetch a looking glass.
My lord.
Read all this paper while the glass doth come.
Fiend! Thou torments me ere I come to hell.
Urge it no more, my lord Northumberland.
The commons will not then be satisfied.
They shall be satisfied! I'll read enough when I do see the very book indeed where all my sins are writ, and that's myself. Give me that glass, and therein will I read. No deeper wrinkles yet. Hath sorrow struck so many blows upon this face of mine and made no deeper wounds? Oh, flattering glass, how dost beguile me? Was this face the face that every day under his household roof did keep 10,000 men? Was this the face that like the sun did make beholders wink? Is this the face which faced so many follies, that was at last outfaced by Bolingbroke? A brittle glory shineth in this face, as brittle as the glory is the face. But there it is, cracked in 100 shivers. Mark, silent king, the moral of this sport. How soon my sorrow hath destroyed my face.
The shadow of your sorrow hath destroyed the shadow of your face.
Say that again. The shadow of my sorrow? Let's see. 'Tis very true my grief lies all within, and these external manners of lament are merely shadows to the unseen grief that swells with silence in the tortured soul. There lies the substance. And I thank thee, king, for thy great bounty, that not only gives me cause to wail, but teaches me the way how to lament the cause. I'll beg one boon, and then be gone, and trouble you no more. Shall I obtain it?
Name it, fair cousin.
Fair cousin, I am greater than a king. For when I was a king, my flatterers were then but subjects. Being now a subject, I have a king here to my flatterer. Being so great, I have no need to beg.
Yet ask.
And shall I have?
You shall.
Then give me leave to go.
Whither?
Whither you will, so I were from your sight.
Go, some of you, convey him to the tower.
Oh, good! Convey! conveyors are you all, that rise thus nimbly by a true king's fall?
On Wednesday next, we solemnly set down our coronation. Lords, prepare yourselves.
A woeful pageant have we here beheld.
The woes to come. The children yet unborn shall feel this day as sharp to them as thorn.
You holy clergymen, is there no plot to rid the realm of this pernicious blot?
My lord, Omer, before I freely speak my mind herein, you shall not only take the sacrament to bury mine intents, but also to effect whatever I shall happen to devise. I see your brows are full of discontent, your hearts of sorrow, and your eyes of tears. Come home with me to supper. I will lay a plot, shall show us all a merry day.
This way the king will come. This is the way to Julius Caesar's ill-erected tower, to whose flint bosom my condemned lord is doomed a prisoner by proud Bolingbroke. Here, let us rest, if this rebellious earth have any resting for her true king's queen.
But see, my lady!
Or rather, do not see. Oh, my fair rose wither, yet look up! Behold, that you in pity may dissolve to dew, and wash him fresh again with true love tears. Thou map of honour! Thou King Richard's tomb, and not King Richard.
Join not with grief, fair woman. Do not so. To make my end too sudden, learn, good soul, to think our former state a happy dream, from which awaked the truth of what we are shows us but this. I am sworn brother, sweet, to grim necessity, and he and I will keep a league till death. Hie thee to France, and cloister thee in some religious house. Our holy lives must win a new world's crown, which our profane hours here have thrown down.
What is my Richard, both in shape and mind transformed and weakened? Hath Bolingbroke deposed thine intellect? Hath he been in thy heart? The lion dying thrusteth forth his paw and wounds the earth, if nothing else, with rage to be o'erpowered. And wilt thou, pupil-like, take the corrections mildly, kiss the rod and fawn on rage with base humility, which art a lion and the king of beasts?
A king of beasts, indeed. If aught but beasts, I had been still a happy king of men. Good sometimes, queen. Prepare thee hence for France. Think I am dead, and that even here thou takest, as from my deathbed, thy last living leave. In winter's tedious nights, sit by the fire with good old folks, and let them tell thee tales of woeful ages long ago betid, and ere thou bid good night, to quiet their griefs, tell thou the lamentable tale of me, and send the hearers weeping to their beds. And some will mourn in ashes, some coal black, for the deposing of a rightful king.
My lord, the mind of Bolingbroke is changed. You must to Pomfret, not unto the tower. And, madam, there is order ta'en for you. With all swift speed, you must away to France.
Northumberland, thou ladder, wherewithal the mounting Bolingbroke ascends my throne. The time shall not be many hours of age more than it is, ere foul sin-gathering head shall break into corruption. Thou shalt think, though he divide the realm and give thee half, it is too little helping him to all. He shall think that thou, which knowest the way to plant unrightful kings, wilt know again, being ne'er so little urged another way, to pluck him headlong from the usurped throne.
My guilt be on my head, and there an end. Take leave and part, for you must part forthwith.
Doubly divorced. Bad men. You violate a twofold marriage, twixt my crown and me, and then betwixt me and my married wife.
And must we be divided? Must we part?
Aye. Hand from hand, my love. And heart from heart.
Banish us both and send the king with me.
That were some love, but little policy.
Then whither he goes, thither let me go.
So two, together weeping, make one woe. Weep thou for me in France, I for thee here.
Better far off than near be near the near. Go count thy ways with sighs, I mine with groans.
So longest way shall have the longest moans.
One kiss shall stop our mouths and dumbly part. Thus give I mine, and thus take I thy heart.
Give me mine own again. 'Twere no good part to take on me and keep and kill thy heart. So now I have mine own again, be gone, that I may strive to kill it with a groan.
We make woe wanton with this fond delay. Once more, adieu. The rest let sorrow say.
My lord, you told me you would tell the rest when weeping made you break the story off of our two cousins coming into London.
Where did I leave?
At that sad stop, my lord, when rude misgoverned hands from windows tops threw dust and rubbish on King Richard's head.
Then, as I said, the Duke, great Bolingbroke, mounted upon a hot and fiery steed, which his aspiring rider seemed to know, with slow but stately pace kept on his course, whilst all tongues cried, God save thee, Bolingbroke. You would have thought the very window spake. So many greedy looks of young and old through casements darted their desiring eyes, whilst he, from one side to the other turning, bareheaded lower than his proud steed's neck, bespake them thus, I thank you, countrymen. And thus still doing, thus he passed along.
Alack, poor Richard! Where rode he the whilst?
As in a theatre, the eyes of men, after a well-graced actor leaves the stage, are idly bent on him that enters next, thinking his prattle to be tedious. Even so, or with much more contempt, men's eyes did scowl on Richard. No man cried, God save him. No joyful tongue gave him his welcome home. But dust was thrown upon his sacred head, which with such gentle sorrow he shook off, that had not God for some strong purpose steeled the hearts of men, they must perforce have melted, and barbarism itself have pitied him. But heaven hath a hand in these events. To Bolingbroke are we sworn subjects now.
Here comes my son, O Merle.
O Merle it was, but that is lost for being Richard's friend. And, madam, you must call him Rutland now.
Welcome, my son. Who are the violets now that strew the green lap of the new-come spring?
Madam, I know not, nor I greatly care not. God knows I had as lief be none as one.
Well, bear you well in this new spring of time, lest you be cropped before you come to prime. What news from Oxford? Do those jousts and triumphs hold?
For aught I know, my lord, they do.
You will be there, I know.
If God prevent it not, I purpose so.
What seal is that hangs without thy bosom? Yea, look'st thou pale? Let me see the writing.
My lord, 'tis nothing.
No matter then who see it. I will be satisfied. Let me see the writing.
I do beseech your grace to pardon me. It is a matter of small consequence, which for some reasons I would not have seen.
Which for some reasons, sir, I mean to see. I fear.
What should you fear? 'Tis nothing but some bond that he has entered into for gay apparel gainst the triumph day.
Bound to himself? What doth he with the bond that he is bound to? Wife, thou art a fool. Boy, let me see the writing.
I do beseech you, pardon me. I may not show it.
I will be satisfied. Let me see it, I say. Treason.
Oh,
foul treason. A villain! Traitor! Sleep!
What is the matter, my lord?
Ho! Who is within there? Saddle my horse!
Why, what is it, my lord?
Give me my boots, I say! Saddle my horse!
What is the matter?
Peace, foolish woman!
I will not peace! What is the matter, O Merle?
Good mother, be content! It is no more than my poor life must answer.
Thy life answer?
Bring me my boots! I will unto the king.
Why, York, what wilt thou do? Wilt thou not hide the trespass of thine own? Have we more sons, or are we like to have? And wilt thou pluck my fair son from mine age and rob me of a happy mother's name?
Thou fond mad woman, wilt thou conceal this dark conspiracy? A dozen of them here have ta'en the sacrament and interchangeably set down their hands to kill the king at Oxford.
He shall be none. We'll keep him here, then what is that to him?
Away, fond woman! Were he 20 times my son, I would appeach him.
Hadst thou groaned for him as I have done, thou wouldst be more pitiful.
Make way, unruly woman!
After Omal, mount thee upon his horse, spur post, and get before him to the king, and beg thy pardon ere he do accuse thee. I'll not be long behind. Though I be old, I doubt not but to ride as fast as York. And never will I rise up from the ground till Bolingbroke have pardoned thee. Away, begone!
Can no man tell me of my unthrifty son? 'Tis full 3 months since I did see him last. If any plague hang over us, 'tis he. I would to God, my lord, he might be found. Inquire at London, amongst the taverns there, for there, they say, he daily doth frequent with unrestrained loose companions, even such, they say, as stand in narrow lanes and beat our watch and rob our passengers, while he, young wanton and effeminate boy, takes on the point of honour to support so dissolute a crew.
My lord, some 2 days since I saw the prince and told him of those triumphs held at Oxford.
And what said the gallant?
His answer was he would unto the stews, and from the commonest creature pluck a glove and wear it as a favour, and with that he would unhorse the lustiest challenger.
As dissolute as desperate. But who comes here?
Where is the king?
What means our cousin that he stares and looks so wildly?
God save your grace, I do beseech your majesty to have some conference with your grace alone.
Withdraw yourself and leave us here alone.
My lord.
What is the matter with our cousin now?
Forever may my knees grow to the earth, unless a pardon ere I rise or speak.
Intended or committed was this fault, if on the first, how heinous e'er it be, to win thy afterlove I pardon thee.
Then give me leave, that I may turn the key, that no man enter till my tale be done.
Have thy desire.
My liege, beware, look to thyself. Thou hast a traitor in thy presence there.
I'll make thee safe.
Stay thy revengeful hand. Thou hast no cause to fear.
Open the door. Secure, foolhardy king. Open the door, or I will break it open.
What is the matter, uncle? Speak.
Peruse this writing here, and thou shalt know the treason that my haste forbids me show.
Remember, as thou read'st, thy promise passed. I do repent me. Read not my name there. My heart is not confederate with my hand.
It was, villain, ere thy hand did set it down. I tore it from the traitor's bosom, king. Fear and not love begets his penitence.
Oh, heinous, strong, and bold conspiracy. Oh, loyal father of a treacherous son, thy overflow of good converts to bad, and thy abundant goodness shall excuse this deadly blot in thy digressing son.
Thou killst me in his life, giving him breath. The traitor lives, the true man's put to death.
What ho, my liege! For God's sake, let me in!
What shrill-voiced suppliant makes this eager cry?
A woman and thine aunt, great king, tis I. Speak with me, pity me, open the door. A beggar begs that never begged before.
Our scene is altered from a serious thing and now changed to the beggar and the king. My dangerous cousin, let your mother in. I know she's come to pray for your foul sin.
Oh, king, believe not this hard-hearted man. Love loving not itself, none other can.
Thou frantic woman, what dost thou make here? Shall thy old dugs once more a traitor rear?
Sweet York, be patient. Hear me, gentle liege.
Rise up, good aunt.
Not yet, I thee beseech. Forever will I walk upon my knees and never see day that the happy sees till thou give joy, until thou bid me joy, by pardoning Rutland, my transgressing boy.
Unto my mother's prayers I bend my knee.
Against them both my true joints bended be.
Pleads he in earnest? Look upon his face. His eyes do drop no tears, his prayers are in jest. His words come from his mouth, ours from our breast.
Good aunt, stand up.
Nay, do not say stand up. Say pardon first, and afterwards stand up. I never longed to hear a word till now. Say pardon, King. Let pity teach thee how. The word is short, but not so short as sweet. No words like pardon for king's mouth so meet.
Good aunt, stand up.
I do not sue to stand. Pardon is all the suit I have in hand.
I pardon him as God shall pardon me.
Oh, happy vantage of a kneeling knee. Yet am I sick for fear. Speak it again. Twice saying pardon doth not pardon twain, but makes one pardon strong.
With all my heart I pardon him.
A God on earth thou art.
But for our trusty bishop and the abbot, with all the rest of that consorted crew, destruction straight shall dog them at the heels. Good uncle, help to order several powers to Oxford, or where'er these traitors are. They shall not live within this world, I swear, but I will have them if I once know where. Uncle, farewell, and cousin, too, adieu. Your mother well hath prayed, and prove you true. Oh,
come, my old son, I pray God make thee new.
Didst thou not mark the king? What words he spake? Have I no friends will rid me of this living fear? Was it not so?
These were his very words.
Have I no friend, quoth he. He spake it twice.
And urged it twice together, did he not?
He did.
And speaking it, he wishly looked on me, as who should say, I would thou wert the man that would divorce this terror from my heart. Meaning, the king at Pomfret. Come, let's go. I am the king's friend, and will rid his foe.
I have been studying how I may compare this prison where I live unto the world. And for because the world is populous, and here is not a creature but myself, I cannot do it. Yet I'll hammer it out. My brain I'll prove the female to my soul, my soul the father, and these two beget a generation of still breeding thoughts. And these same thoughts people this little world in humours like the people of this world. Thoughts tending to ambition, they do plot unlikely wonders. How these vain, weak nails may tear a passage through the flinty ribs of this hard world, my ragged prison walls. And for they cannot die in their own pride. Thoughts tending to content flatter themselves that they are not the first of fortune's slaves, nor shall not be the last. Like silly beggars who, sitting in the stocks, refuge their shame that many have and others must sit there. And in this thought they find a kind of ease, bearing their own misfortunes on the back of such as have before endured the like. Thus play I in one person, many people, and none contented. Sometimes am I king, then treason makes me wish myself a beggar, and so I am. Then crushing penury persuades me I was better when a king. Then am I kinged again, and by and by think that I am unkinged by Bolingbroke, and straight am nothing. But whate'er I be, nor I, nor any man that but man is, with nothing shall be pleased, till he be eased with being nothing. Music do I hear. Ha ha! Keep time! How sour sweet music is when time is broke and no proportion kept. So is it in the music of men's lives. And here have I the daintiness of ear to check time broke in a disordered string, but for the concord of my state and time had not an ear to hear my true time broke. I wasted time, and now doth time waste me. For now hath time made me his numbering clock. My thoughts are minutes, and with sighs they jar their watches on unto mine eyes. The outward watch, whereto my finger, like a dial's point, is pointing still, in cleansing them from tears. Now, sir, the sound that tells what hour it is are clamorous groans which strike upon my heart, which is the bell. So sighs and tears and groans show minutes, times, and hours. But my time runs posting on in Bolingbroke's proud joy, while I stand fooling here as Jack of the Clock. This music mads me. Let it sound no more. For though it hath holped madmen to their wits, in me it seems it will make wise men mad. Yet blessing on the heart that gives it me, for 'tis a sign of love, and love to Richard is a strange brooch in this all-hating world.
Hail, royal prince.
Thanks, noble peer. The cheapest of us is 10 groats too dear. What art thou? And how comest thou hither, where no man never comes but that sad dog that brings me food to make misfortune live?
I was a poor groom of thy stable king, when thou working, who, travelling towards York with much ado at length, have gotten leave to look upon my sometimes royal master's face. How it grieved my heart when I beheld in London streets that coronation day, when Bolingbroke rode on Roan Barbary. That horse that thou so often hast bestrid. That horse that I so carefully have dressed.
Rode he on Barbary? Tell me, a gentle friend, how went he under him?
So proudly, as if he'd disdained the ground.
So proud that Bolingbroke was on his back. That jade hath ate bread from my royal hand. This hand hath made him proud with clapping him. Would he not stumble? Would he not fall down, since pride must have a fall, and break the neck of that proud man that did usurp his back? Forgiveness, horse, why do I rail on thee? Since thou, created to be awed by man, wast born to bear. I was not made a horse, and yet I bear the burden like an ass. Spurred, galled, and tired by jouncing Bolingbroke.
Fellow, give place. Here is no longer stay.
If thou love me, 'tis time thou wert away.
What my tongue dares not, that my heart shall say.
My lord, will please you to fall to.
Taste of it first, as thou art wont to do.
My lord, I dare not. Sir Piers of Exton, who lately came from the king, demands the contrary.
The devil take Henry of Lancaster and thee! Patience is stale, and I am weary of it.
Help! Help! Help!
Have at him, my lord.
How now? What means death in this rude assault? Villain, thy own hand yields thy death. Get sword!
Go thou and fill another room in hell!
That hand shall burn in never-quenching fire that staggers thus my person. Exton, thy fierce hand hath with the king's blood stained the king's own land.
As full of valor as of royal blood.
Mount, mount, my soul. Thy seat is up on high, whilst my
gross flesh sinks downward, here to die.
As full of valor as of royal blood. Both of us spilled. Oh, would the deed were good. For now, the devil that told me I did well says that this deed is chronicled in hell. This dead king, to the living king I'll bear. Take hence the rest and give them burial here.
Kind Uncle York, the latest news we hear is that the rebels have consumed with fire our town of Sisseter in Gloucestershire.
But whether they be ta'en or slain, we hear not.
Welcome, Northumberland. What is the news?
First, to thy sacred state wish I all happiness. The next news is I have to London sent the heads of Salisbury, Spencer, Blunt and Kent. The manner of their taking may appear at large discoursed in this paper here.
We thank thee, good Northumberland, for thy pains, and to thy worth we'll add right worthy gains.
My lord, I have from Oxford brought to London the heads of Brockus and Sir Bennet Seely, two of the dangerous consorted traitors that sought at Oxford thy dire overthrow.
Thy pains, my good lord, shall not be forgot. Right noble is thy merit, well I wot.
The grand conspirator, Abbot of Westminster, hath yielded up his body to the grave. No. But here is Carlisle, living to abide thy kingly doom and sentence of his pride.
Carlisle, this is your doom. Choose out some secret place, some reverend room, more than thou hast, and with it joy thy life. So as thou livest in peace, die free from strife. For though mine enemy thou hast ever been, high sparks of honour in thee have I seen.
I thank thee, gentle majesty.
Great king, within this coffin I present thy buried fear. Herein all breathless lies the mightiest of thy greatest enemies, Richard of Bordeaux, by me hither brought.
Exton, I thank thee not, for thou hast wrought a deed of slander with thy fatal hand upon my head and all this famous land.
From your own mouth, my lord, did I this deed?
They love not poison that do poison need, nor do I thee. Though I did wish him dead, I hate the murderer, love him murdered. The guilt of conscience take thee for thy labour, but neither my good word nor princely favour. With Cain go wander thorough shades of night, and never show thy head by day nor light.
My lord,
I do protest my soul is full of woe, that blood should sprinkle me to make me grow. I'll make a voyage to the Holy Land to wash this blood off from my guilty hand. March sadly after, grace my mournings here in weeping after this untimely bier.
In Richard II by William Shakespeare, Richard was played by Joel McCormack and Henry Bolingbroke by Geoffrey Stratfield. John of Gaunt was played by John Rowe, the Duke of York by Philip Jackson, and Thomas Mowbray by Stephen Rodri. O'Merle was Will Howard, Northumberland, Christian Rodska, Salisbury, Joe Sims, Percy, Edmund Wiseman, and the Queen, Jamie Barbacoff. Bushy was Tom Forrester, Baggett, David Sturziker, Green, Simon Ludders, Bishop Carlisle, Kieran Self, and the Duchess of York, Georgie Glenn. The Welsh captain was Sean Pritchard and the Queen's Lady, Alexandria Riley. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Richard II was adapted and directed for radio by Alison Hindle.
Well, next week's Drama on Three marks the 80th birthday of Tony Harrison with the premiere of his Iphigenia in Crimea, a verse drama after Euripides. That's at 9 o'clock next Sunday night. And there's also a classical theme during the week.
On BBC Radio 4.
A song enters his head.
He remembers how he played to his wife.
Exiled in a foreign land.
2 hours into their voyage, the engine cuts.
New stories drawn from Homer's Odyssey.
The current hisses its threat. I'm going to devour the lot of you.
The Odyssey Project, My Name is Nobody. Presented by BBC Radio 4's Poet in Residence, Daljit Nagra. All this week at 9:45 in the morning on BBC Radio 4.
But you're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's 11:15 and it's time now for Early Music Late, presented by Simon Hayes.
Hello, and this evening we're in Finland for a fresh take on Vivaldi's Four Seasons from the Scandinavian strings of Barocco Boreale. They've thrown out the rule book and brought in Andrew Lawrence King to spice things up with a harp, psaltery and a rasping regal. But most important of all is the orchestra's director, the violinist Kreta Maria Kentälä, who's also the soloist in all four concertos. And as we'll hear, she stamps her own brand of percussive, folk-inflected playing on the whole band. We're excited, above all, by Vivaldi's wonderfully descriptive writing, which they stop at nothing to express, even if it means adding a few amusing sound effects. Vivaldi's Four Seasons must surely be the most popular of all Baroque concertos. But what's less well known is that they were inspired by four sonnets, probably written by Vivaldi himself, one for each season. To ensure the players understood exactly what he was expressing in the music, Vivaldi actually had lines from his poems carefully cued into the performing parts. For listeners and connoisseurs, though, he had the poems separately printed. And tonight I'll read one before each season. Spring has arrived, and happy birds welcome it with their joyful song, while the streams murmur sweetly at the breath of zephyrs. But now the sky begins to darken, and thunder and lightning arrive. When these fall silent, the birds return to their singing. And so in the pleasant flower-filled meadow, to the sweet murmur of the leaves and trees, the goat-herder sleeps, with his faithful dog beside him. The rustic bagpipes now strike up a festive noise, and the nymphs and shepherds dance together under the smiling sky to celebrate the arrival of a glorious spring.